What's going on, people? Welcome to Paint Points. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting. This podcast is proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network and the Tanis Hoopers family. It's been a while since I got behind the mic and got into one of these podcasts. I'm happy to be back. I'm at the new house, new internet, finally set up and ready to go. I am with Jack Borman, Tanis Hoopers contributor, friend of the show, virtual co-host at this point, I think. Jack, what's going on, man?
Not a whole lot, man. Just kind of waiting out this draft and free agency starting and then summer league. So we've got a fun few weeks coming up, but man, it has been a very slow July. And I know we can't complain about slow Julys after what happened last year, but man, let me tell you, I haven't felt burnout from a Timberwolves content perspective ever until I think this year. And it's hit kind of hard, but it's been a ton of fun to be writing about the Lynx, and boy, oh boy, were they playing well right before the Olympic break. They won 7 in a row, hottest team in the WNBA. So it's going to be a lot of fun to be in person for all of their games for the rest of the season, which will be really, really cool. So yeah, but other than the Lynx just crushing it, man, on the Wolves front, there hasn't been a whole lot. So I'm excited to get into a few things here.
Where's the drama? Where's our usual Timberwolves drama? This is so boring.
Well, I mean, like, depending if you count like
the trade requests and, you know, upset players and people wanting to leave, and now we just got nothing. It's too harmonious at the moment. I hate it.
If you count everybody bitching about Ben Simmons, like, there's your drama, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just been odd. Like, there was I guess we did have the ant ankle where everybody freaked out there for a couple hours.
Yeah, I fell into a pit of depression for about 3 hours there.
Yeah, it was tough because, like, there was a Lynx game that night, and so I like found out about it right before I left the office to go to Target Center. And so then Kyle actually called me while I was driving. I was like, hey, I'm driving. Like, before I left, I was like, hey, I'm going to be driving. Let me know if anything happens. He was like, yeah, it's just an ankle. So, yeah, that was good. And then getting downtown, it sounded like the vibe down there was fine, that no one was really too concerned. And now we see with John's article that went out today, Mailbag said that now there's even some internal discussions going on about Ant potentially playing in summer league, which is interesting. You know, I don't know if he'll play in games, but even just being able to practice with that squad, I think would be big. So hopefully we've got that going.
Yeah, and we do plan today on talking a little bit of summer league stuff and a little bit of player development kind of side of things. But I think, to begin with, we will start with some more NBA-centric news, which is Damian Lillard. There's been kind of varying reports. The one from Henry Abbott from True Hoop yesterday was pretty blunt and straightforward that he's going to request a trade in the coming days. Maybe even by the time you've heard this, that news cycle has changed slightly. But as we speak, the feeling is that he's going to request a trade coming soon, obviously on the back of the Chauncey Billups hiring, the string of first round exits, the management in general in Portland. All of that stuff kind of seems to be contributing to this impending trade request. And then there's also been reports that stuff isn't true. I think Lillard himself said on radio today that isn't true. I don't have the source in front of me, so I apologize for not.
Yeah, so I can jump in there. So he actually had post-practice media availability with USA Basketball today after their practice in Las Vegas. It was closed door, but it was broadcast. It was picked up live by Portland Radio, so I listened to it live on Portland Radio. But yeah, essentially what he said was, you know, it's not true that I'm going to request a trade. He said that all of his conversations with Olshay have been, you know, between the two of them. He said what he's had to say. He doesn't think that the roster as it currently stands is a championship caliber roster. And he's pretty much given the ultimatum of upgrade the roster or I'm going to leave. But he did say today, bluntly and flatly, that he expects to be a Portland Trailblazer this upcoming season. So I think that he did a very good job of kind of walking the tightrope of, you know, having worded things in a way that kind of gives him an out where, you know, I think it was kind of set up where, you know, if he then requests out, he can say, well, I said, hey, you have this opportunity, and then you blew this opportunity, was kind of the way that I took it. But yeah, I think it kind of screams, go get Ben Simmons or an impact, you know, needle moving guy, or I'm out. And it seems like Simmons is really the biggest fish that's out there that's ready to move, I think. Because Beal is essentially just like a kind of souped up version of CJ McCollum. Like, their problems are not scoring, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And obviously, anything relating to Ben Simmons is going to come back into Timberwolves circles, because there obviously is, you know, reported interest in him, and we know that Gerson Rosas is definitely interested in him, just in the mantra that he's operated with during his time in Minnesota. Whether they have the assets and whatnot to acquire him is a completely different story. But sticking with Portland, do you think CJ McCollum and maybe assets, or CJ McCollum straight swap, is the kind of deal that will get Daryl Morey to the table and to start really discussing kind of moving on from Simmons?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, people in the league know that I think that we're kind of at a point of no return with Simmons in Philly. Like, I just don't know how you can keep him on the team after the comments that Embiid made, the comments that Rivers made, you know, and then some of the other pieces that have come out about some of the internal dialogue about Simmons and kind of the process of how his development has played out over the last few years. I just don't see a conclusion that is not him playing in a different uniform at the start of this upcoming season. And yeah, I think that Portland makes a lot of sense. I think that, you know, Philadelphia really needs a guy that can set the table and create for everybody while also stretching the floor. And so CJ can certainly do that. He's one of the best secondary, you know, creators off the dribble in the entire NBA. He can get his own shot. Obviously, he's a very good 3-point shooter. And that's very valuable, but again, like, CJ's kind of in that D'Angelo Russell category of, you know, very good player, but is overpaid and could probably, you know, prevent your team from completely getting over the hump in the playoffs just because his salary number is so big, relative to what he's going to give you. So, and they're very one-way players as well. So, you know, I think that they need a more impactful offensive player than CJ McCollum if they were doing it straight up. So I think that it would probably make sense for them to trade CJ McCollum and other assets, whether that be, you know, a player like Anfernee Simons or, you know.
The cupboards are pretty bare.
Yeah, I mean, they just don't really. Or Nasir Little maybe is like another, you know, another guy that they can put on the wing in Philadelphia to, you know, to help shore up some of the defense that Ben Simmons is going to take with him to Portland if he does get traded. But, you know, like you're saying, that Portland just doesn't have very many guys that they could feasibly trade. Because they have very few guys that are actually impactful that play at the back end of their at the back end of the rotation, and when that's the case, it's just tough to try and make deals with teams that are really cap hamstrung. I mean, you know, for this upcoming season, the only players they have that are getting paid less than $9 million are Simons, Little, and Ellaby. So. No, that just makes it really tough, because you have, you know, Rhonda Hollis Jefferson, Harry Giles, Carmelo, Enes Kanter, all guys that are making under that, you know, $7 million mark that are free agents this upcoming or this summer. So Portland is in a really tough spot, and I think Portland's best case, I think, is their best case to Dame would be going and getting Simmons, because I don't know how else that team makes a needle moving trade.
How much do you think Simmons moves the needle for them? Like, I don't think they're contenders in the West with Simmons. I think they're probably better than they were this year.
Yeah, I definitely don't think that they're going to be contenders. And I think that Dame knows that. But I just think that Dame, I think Dame really does not want to be the bad guy, because I think Dame has so aggressively spoken out against people who, I think the quote that he used last summer was running from the grind of building a team and a culture and a franchise by yourself. And I think that he's kind of seen the treatment that, that guys have gotten for going back on their word. And he doesn't want to be as explicit about it, but I think he also realizes, like, hey, I'm 30 or 31. I'm 31 now, just turned 31, I think, last weekend. And my clock's ticking, man. And I'm playing like a superhuman. You know, when I'm out there, you saw that game. What was it? Game 5 against Denver. Game 4. When he just went bananas and he got no help at all. And I think you see that, and it's understandable that that's what has kind of caused him to change. But with Simmons, you know, that definitely makes them a top, you know, 20-ish defense as opposed to being the worst defense just automatically off the bat. And then if they keep Robert Covington, you know, I think that's a really formidable, you know, wing duo defensively. And Yusuf Nurkic isn't terrible as a big inside on the defensive end, and then you still have Nasir Little too, who's also, you know, a very solid defensive wing, but man, like, other than that, it's really tough because they're just gonna have to hope that, you know, guys are coming on these 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 million dollar range, and I don't know if you're Olshay, given all the shit that's come out about you personally, your front office, your owner, how you're going to be able to convince guys to come play in Portland, knowing that if it doesn't prove to be any better than this iteration, this current iteration of the Blazers, that he's just going to ask out. You know what I mean? So maybe they get guys for a year, but then you could very well be back to the same problem again next year. So, I mean, At the very least, you know that with Dame, you will not have issues outscoring other teams. It's just a matter of getting stops. And some of that's on Dame himself, too. But
He was horrible defensively this year. And he hasn't been... He's never been good, but he had that reputation, that David Vanderpool reputation, that Vanderpool helped him and CJ kind of get to a passable level, but... For the last 2 or 3 years, man, he's been a sieve defensively, and I know that he gets less slack than anyone else on that team, and deservedly so, because he is the reason why they make the playoffs every year, and even if it just is a first round exit, it's still the playoffs every year, and it's still all on Dame, the reason that they are semi successful. But like, their defense, it's hard to have such a high-scoring guard who doesn't play any defense, and then you put him alongside McCollum, and you put him alongside guys like Simons, and even, you know, Nurkic can be exposed at times, even though I do rate Nurkic as a defender. He is quite lumbering and slow against certain matchups. It's a recipe for disaster kind of there defensively, and I don't know how much Simmons actually fixes that. Just like I don't know how much he fixes Minnesota defensively, but he certainly makes them better, and when you have Dame there, you're obviously going to compete offensively every night, and maybe the old Timberwolves mantra of solid is enough defensively kind of, you know, gets them over the hump. But what is over the hump? That's what I keep coming back to. Is over the hump a Western Conference Finals? Is it a second round? Like, I don't see them being better than that, and I still think the West, even with some injuries that will linger into next year, like Kawhi Leonard's and Jamal Murray's, I just think that the West is still really strong, man. Like it's still going to be very hard to get over the hump in that conference. And I don't know. I just don't know what I would be thinking right now if I'm a Blazers fan, because I think they're truly stuck in NBA purgatory at the moment. Like, they're stuck in the middle. I don't know if maybe just tearing it down and trading both Lillard and McCollum for a bunch of young guys and a bunch of picks and really just going the long route is the best way here. Like, that's what teams do. That's what you have to do to become competitive, I think, at some stages. And right now, it kind of feels that way for the Blazers. Like, I don't think they have a retool in them, really, unless it's someone better than Simmons.
But who, like, I just don't see anybody coming out and saying, I want out, and then being okay with going to Portland, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And, like, I think Lillard is in the sweet, he's in the Kevin Garnett kind of spot right now, where if he leaves, I don't think he'll get as much backlash as a lot of other guys, because he's clearly given it his all for the franchise, and he's done it for a long time, and they haven't surrounded him with the pieces that he needs to become a champion or to become a perennial contender. And that was what it was like with Garnett here, and I think that he didn't receive much vitriol when he left, just because it made sense, even to people who were his biggest fans and to people who were Timberwolves fans. It made sense for him to leave, and I think that Dame's in that same spot at the moment.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I mean, and, you know, people want to point to, like, you know, Dame can't pitch about the defense because he's terrible defensively himself. I mean, you just want to look at offensive output and percentiles, okay? Like, over the last 8 seasons, he has been in the 90th percentile or higher in terms of offensive impact. It's like offensive EPM every single season. The last 4 seasons, 94, 98, 98, 100. That's outrageous. In 2019, he was 2019 and 2018, he was a positive defender relative to other point guards, which is pretty impressive to me.
Those were those David Vanderpool years.
Yeah, exactly. Like. Yeah. And so, like, I just don't think that, like, you can't have a passable defense with Dame there. I just don't believe that. And I think,
well, if you look at, like, you look at the playoffs this year, I think one thing that's been broken to pieces is that a superstar who's not a great defender can't ever lead a team to wins. Like, Trae Young pretty much single-handedly kind of smashed that to pieces, because he's still the terrible defender that he always has been. But with the right team building and with the right guys around him, they made that possible, and they made his offense be able to outshine his poor defense. And that's what Lillard, like, that can happen. And that's for Minnesota fans listening as well. Like, that can happen with D'Angelo Russell, but you need to put the puzzle pieces, you know, very carefully in place around that weak link if you want to kind of get a defense that can succeed enough to win games.
Yeah, I mean, and what we've learned over the last few years too, and I think this is obviously a huge bet that the Minnesota front office is making, is that, you know, excellent offense is going to beat excellent defense every single time, and over the course of a series. Like, if the number one offense played the number one defense, the number one offense is very, very, very likely going to win. And everybody would rather have the number one offense than the number one defense. And so, you know, as it relates to Portland, like, yeah, you know, they're just not in a position where they're going to be able to have, you know, a number one offense, and then also have a defense that's going to be able to, you know, make up the gap there. And their team's just not very deep, and it's not going to be deep no matter how you slice it. And so, like you were saying, you know, they kind of have to go this rebuild route. And so I actually put a bunch of thoughts together in a thread on Twitter. It was like 15 tweets long, but I never tweeted it because there were all these reports about Dame was going to address stuff, and I didn't want to put it out there knowing that the circumstances of my thread could change. But now that I've kind of had some thoughts to think about it, and I knew that we were going to be on tonight, I have some thoughts on that, if you don't mind.
Lay them on me.
Yeah. So I think that with Portland, like, their only move could very well be just keeping, their only play in potentially keeping Dame could very well just be firing Olshay. If Olshay stays and the request gets made, his only play to buy himself time is to trade Dame, not for a guy like Ben Simmons, but to trade Dame for, like, an OKC type package, where it's just like every pick until the end of time.
Because GMs don't get fired for embarking on huge rebuilds because, like, they like at that point they haven't really done anything wrong. Like they might get fired 2 or 3 years down the line if that rebuild goes sour. But like if you get the approval from the higher ups, you know, the owner to start that rebuild, like there's not much you can do wrong for that first 1 or 2 years. Like especially if you're trading Damian Lillard, who will bring you back a mountain of picks, and CJ McCollum will bring you back assets. Like I just think that is the best way for Olshay to keep his job in the short term.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, you know, you said it really well that, you know, generally when teams go on these full-blown rebuilds, it has the full support of everybody in the organization. So it's not just like the owner's like, hey man, what the hell? Like we weren't on the same page here. So, you know, I'd truly think that they'd think about trading CJ then too, and Rocco. You know, they gave up 2 first-round picks to get Robert Covington. And that also is hamstringing them moving forward. And we talked about their lack of depth. That's a real thing. So I think that means no Simmons in Portland if Dame requests out. You know, I think that a Simmons-Dame swap like makes a or centered swap where it would be like a 3-team deal and Simmons would go somewhere else makes a lot of sense for Portland from a financial perspective. You know, if you're Philly, you get Dame. Portland would get Maxey and a couple, you know, lottery protected first from Philly, and then the opportunity to reroute Simmons to a third team, and you'd get even more picks, another, you know, 1 or 2 younger long term guys, and then a bunch of expiring money. And I think Minnesota is an interesting third team, just based on that criteria, because you know Portland can take Rubio, Beasley, Colt, and Culver. In addition, and Bolmero, shit, Bolmero too, if they want him, no offense. because they'd immediately shed $25 million in salary next season, like 2022, 2023, with Rubio and Culver, because Culver's got a team option for 22, 23. And then you could potentially end up in the neighborhood of like 5 to 7 first round picks or pick swaps.
And Tyrese Maxey, who I think I've always, you know, I had him at 6 last year on my draft board. I know that means nothing to the Portland brass, but like he proved this year that he has really high potential as a point guard in the league or a combo guard.
Yeah.
Matisse Thybul is a guy whose star has risen throughout the year as just one of the best perimeter defenders in the league. Like an insanely, insanely good perimeter defender and very young team-controlled contract. He's his team options this year, but I think he has another year after that. And then you'd probably take in like George Hill or something if they need to make it some sort of money work, who is non-guaranteed. And then you get, yeah, like 4, 5, 6 first round picks. Like if that's not a building block for a rebuild, then I don't know what is.
Yeah. And I mean, does Portland do that without getting McDaniels or Nas? Like maybe, you know, it's probably unlikely. But, you know, it's a starting point. Like, I think that Minnesota's, like we've said, you know, Minnesota's only hope of getting Simmons is an all-star player, likely an all-star point guard, landing in Philadelphia. So Dame checks that box. And then, you know, going this route with the picks also kind of gives Portland an opportunity to negotiate with both teams. Because, you know, they can say, like, yeah, Philly, like, we're really open to doing this, but like, you know, it's Dame and you can win a title. And if you really have the opportunity to win a title, is one extra first round pick, or is like the difference between like, you know, including Seth Curry or Matisse Thybul, like the difference between those two players going to like stop you from doing it? No, it's not going to. So that's helpful. And then just running through like other options, like Golden State could give up Wiggins, Wiseman, Poole, and every pick they have for the rest of time to give it one last shot, and I could very well see them doing that, but I also think that, you know, part of the reason why Golden State was so damn good at the beginning of their dynasty was because they were a really deep team, and like they could very well use those other assets they have to try and fill out their bench with really high-end role players, which I think would almost be smarter, you know, considering both the short term and the long term, because then you aren't mortgaging your entire future. But yeah, I mean, Miami doesn't have any real picks they could give up. I'm ruling Miami out almost completely. Plus two, like, I don't...
And assets. Like, Miami don't have many great assets. Like, yeah. Outside of the pitch, they just don't have that young player. Like, unless Tyler Hero is that player, but I think his stock has fallen off pretty, you know, immensely. They're not going to give up Bam, obviously. Duncan Robertson is not really a young, you know, exciting player as much as he is a really helpful player. Precious Achiuwa,
sure,
again, like middling kind of player. Like KZ Okpala, again, not like they're not Maxis, and they're not Thibels, they're not even, you know, like they're
Malik Beasley.
They're obviously better than they're not Malik Beasley's. Like they're better than Culver, but that's the bar is in hell to be better than Culver.
Yeah,
so.
And then the other. You know, the other two teams that I have in here are the Knicks, but I think the Knicks don't even want to trade for Dame. They're not going to include...
The Knicks have hamstrung themselves so many times making silly moves, and not that trading for Damian Lillard is a silly move, but it just feels like at this point, they're finally building towards something internally and naturally, and it feels like it's just a huge risk for a team that's been mired in terribleness for so long to risk the RJ Barretts and the Julius Randles of the world that have really put them back on the pedestal that they've always needed to be as New York.
And financially, they have no real way of getting there without including Randle in a deal. So that's another thing. So I'm ruling them out. The most interesting one to me is Boston. Boston, pretty clean. Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, and picks gets you there financially.
And that's more of a retool than a rebuild, because they're still, like, you know, you still have good players, like I and you get the picks as well,
and
you're not the worst team in the West immediately, which is probably still appealing to a guy like Olshay whose job is teetering on the brink of destruction.
Probably won't
want
to give it up. And so yeah. I figured you might say that, and so I went on the hunt for an interesting third team that you could then turn Brown and or Smart into. And I think one of the most interesting teams in the NBA that nobody talks about right now is the Orlando Magic. The Magic have two top eight picks, all of their future picks, another first from Chicago, and they have a bunch of scattered firsts and seconds from other teams around the NBA over the course of the next six or seven seasons. So they have more than just their own picks moving forward. They have a huge expiring in Gary Harris, which is like $21, $22 million. A two-year deal in Terrence Ross that is like $12 million a year over the next two, which is super palatable. And you can throw Terrence Ross on a shitty team and just have him do whatever the hell he wants. And then you also have Mo Bamba as an expiring contract if you need additional expiring money that Portland wants to get off of. Like if they wanted to trade them.
I'm still a Mo Bamba believer.
So am I. So am I.
I will never give up the hope.
Yeah, and so all of those assets make a really interesting play. Like you could trade both of those lottery picks potentially, or one of them, and then like two future ones for those players. And then you have a top eight pick, Isaac coming back, Fultz, Cole Anthony, and whatever the hell you're going to do at center. You could sign a center this offseason. And I think that's a really interesting team that is for sure a playoff team and like a middle of the pack playoff team, I think. If they're set at point guard.
Do they want to go back to middle of the pack playoff team though? Because they just got out of middle of the pack playoff team.
But the thing though is like, you know, I feel like that's a projectable, pretty competitive core.
And one that can get better rather than what they were with Vooch, which was kind of just the eighth or the seventh seed every year and never better.
And I think
that.
It's a really balanced team too. Like I could see that being a team that's like borderline top 10 in offense and defense, potentially.
Yeah.
So that's one that's interesting. But like my overall thoughts just on the whole thing are like, you know, the Sixers make the most sense for Portland if Dame does force his hand, and Simmons does not make sense for them. In that context, like I could very well see Portland and, you know, Philadelphia doing, like you mentioned, a CJ Ben Simmons swap or something centered around that. But, you know, I just don't see how that helps Philadelphia at all.
I just think it leaves both teams in no man's land. Like, Philly probably did a little bit better, but I don't think CJ is the guy who wins them a championship. Like, they need a shot creator, and they need a secondary ball handler and a guy who can play off Embiid. But, like, is CJ McCollum the guy that's going to do it? Like, he can do those things, but can he do them at a high level every game?
He couldn't even do it as a Robin. So I don't know how he could do it as a Batman if he can't do it as a Robin, you know? Like, Dame's begging for help, and CJ couldn't help him against one of the weakest, you know, perimeter defenses in the NBA in Denver, considering that Denver's guard and wing rotation was just thrashed by injuries this year. Between Barton, PJ Dozier, and Jamal all being out. And then they also got rid of Torrey Craig, too. Like, they just didn't have as much out there. Like, you have Campazzo and Monte Morris as your two guards. And, like, you're telling me that you couldn't go get a bucket? Like, I just don't know how that helps Philadelphia necessarily. And I think just with Minnesota, I think it just opens this other three-team route that allows them to kind of get in on a big deal, which, you know, I think is really significant for them because, and you know, we all know it's the only real way they're going to improve the team. And you have to get top-end talent in the building if you want any hope at going into free agency saying and selling guys on, like, this is what you could be if you came here. And so, yeah, like what are your thoughts about just Minnesota getting in on a big deal or just, like, where the Simmons situation is presently?
Yeah, I think, like you said, it's crucial that they do, or at least that they need to be in and around those discussions. We both know that Rosas thinks the same way. Like, he's going to try and get in on one of these big three-team deals, or even just a straight swap, you know, with Minnesota and another team. But to me, outside of Simmons, I think it gets hard I'd be surprised still if it happens. I know they'll want it to happen, but it just seems like it's not like they're not asset rich, even though they have a smart, you know, smart president of basketball operations, and they have guys who they can move, and they have good contracts like Beasley and Rubio, who are guys that can facilitate deals for high level players. But I don't know, man. It just feels like it's unlikely. Like, I don't know if you feel that same way, but it to me, it feels like it's not impossible at all. But it feels unlikely. And if it's not Simmons, I think it feels even more unlikely just because, like, I don't know if the asking price for a Miles Turner is probably a little high for them. Like, they're not going to give up Jaden McDaniels for Miles Turner. Indiana don't accept a deal that's anything less than a really good young player and kind of salary fillers. Then John Collins seems less likely still to me by the day. Like, I know that we kind of came to an agreement there last time we spoke that Collins is probably going to get matched by Atlanta if it's not the full max, I think. Like, I think they're probably willing to give him $100 million at this stage just to try and keep the core together. The fan base is clearly pretty elated with how that team has progressed, and they had a really good playoffs run. And I just think that keeping that together is a good way to keep the fans on board and to keep the spirits high in the Atlanta dressing room and the front office. I just don't know. I just think that, like, who else is there that's going to get moved? I know every year there's a surprising name that comes up that gets moved or starts to think about getting moved, but I don't know. I feel like it's unlikely. I don't know if you have a different view on that, but I just feel like unless it's Simmons in a three-team deal with either Lillard, Lowry, or maybe even Beal, like, I don't know how Minnesota get in for a star-level player or a guy just underneath that star level.
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, Minnesota inviting all these teams in town for this second combine last week was really cool in the sense that, you know, I can't remember the last time anything like that has happened. But I also think it's, you know, a good signal to the league that, like, hey, we're open for business. And, like, if you need help facilitating a trade ahead of what's going to be a monster free agency period next year, that Minnesota wants to get in on that. Because I think that as a third or fourth team in a deal, like, it's easy to accrue, like, a second round pick here, a young guy, like a Noel Reed type of contract there, just for helping facilitate a deal. which is important. I think stating your intentions to the league and like starting to cultivate better relationships with guys that you've talked about multiple times and canvassing the league, I think matters. And I think that it's important that Minnesota, is telling teams that they're aggressive and overall too, I think it helps like your players too. Your players know, like your top end players, I mean, that like, you know that you're doing everything in your power to try and get this guy or that guy. And it's great. You know, I think Gerson has like full support of D'Angelo and Carl and Ant, and seemingly has great relationships with those guys. So hopefully it's similar with other front offices kind of around the league. But I'm with you, man. It just seems unlikely, like super unlikely at this point, that because Minnesota is pretty much just like sitting there like, just on their hands and knees, just kind of praying for like Lowry to want to go to Philadelphia over Miami, who was the preferred destination reportedly for Lowry at the deadline. And then the Dame thing, like, you know, I don't see Dame requesting a trade in the middle of the season. Like, that just seems odd. I don't know the last time a huge megastar was traded during the season rather than at the deadline.
Harden this year, but Harden
that's right.
A weird position where he was barely even, you know, around.
But it wasn't like a trade deadline thing. It was more my point. Like that was something where like
too much hope. It's too much sitting, like you said. It's too much sitting on your hands and hoping for everything else to fall into your lap. I think that the more likely path is that they get in on one of these deals and end up with a small asset coming back that helps their bench, like. And it's not as sexy, you know, but it's still important, I think, that they make upgrades over the Laymans and the, you know, maybe even the Vanderbilts or the Noels. Like, we'll get into all these guys after the ad break coming up soon. But I just think that if they can get helpful bench players, that's not as important as getting John Collins or getting Ben Simmons. But it's very vital for this team that has pretty, you know, exciting top-end talent and a really steep drop-off after that top-end talent. And I think that's what ends up happening.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that those are the types of moves that are sneaky big in just, like, the overall cohesion of the team as a whole. Like, it would obviously wouldn't be, like, a Jay Crowder player, but, like, a light version of that type of player, you know, where like,
Can they get in for Robert Covington? Do you know what I mean? Like, if all this goes down to, can they get Covington or that? Can they get Derek Jones Jr.? Like, can they get a guy like that from a team rather than being the face of the move? Just be the team that sneaks in and gets a player that they've always wanted. Like, you know, obviously Covington was here and they liked him. Derek Jones Jr. they chased last year. You know, those kind of players, I think that's what they'll be. I think they'll shoot for the moon and they'll you know, land on the stars. And that's good enough for me. But, you know, I think that to pull that off, you need to shoot for the moon. Like, and I think that's important that they're doing that. And like you said, that the draft combine, second combine thing that they held in Minneapolis, like, smart. It's just so smart because even like that, like you said, it just signals to teams that you're open for business. Like, I think that was a perfect way to put it. And that even if we don't end up with Ben Simmons, we do want to end up with something. Like, we need players that help, and we're willing to facilitate your trades, get you better, if you can, you know, give us some of the scraps on the side.
Absolutely.
Let's take a break, and then we'll change gears a little bit. I want to kind of talk more about the Timberwolves roster, less about trades and stuff, and we'll talk a little bit about Summer League and we'll see where we go from there. Okay, we are back. We've done the trade talk, the obligatory trade talk that gets us through this long off season. Now I want to do the obligatory let's talk about the roster kind of talk. We mentioned the draft combine that they held. Before we get into the players on this roster, is there an archetype? Is there a player that you have your eyes on for an undrafted free agent or a second rounder if they end up kind of buying into the second round or moving a Culver or something to get into the second round? Is there a guy that piques your interest, or just an archetype of player that you think that they need to kind of zero in on?
Yeah, I think something for the Timberwolves is we saw a lot of Naz Reid and Kat playing together, at least relative to the first part of the season, once Finch took over. And I thought that was really interesting. But I do think it kind of creates, you know, an interesting opportunity in your rotation for more of a traditional five or rim running big, because D'Angelo Russell was dynamite with Jared Allen in Brooklyn. And Finch is extremely creative, and has had, you know, rim running bigs, in his previous stops. And so I think that the opportunity to kind of pair that as a look that you can throw for 3-4 minutes over the course of, you know, two quarters in a game, can really help you. And just adding like some stability in an offense that can help D'Angelo Russell get rhythm, is really great. You know, I think that there was hope that Jared Vanderbilt could be that guy, but you know, he's 6'8", 6'9", maybe a short 6'9", and he just doesn't have the best hands, unfortunately. And I you know, he's a really good perimeter defender, which is awesome, but is just not that guy rim rolling. So I think that is an archetype that the Wolves should look at. And I know that you, me, and Tyler Metcalf are all the way in on one player. And funny enough, he just so happens to be a Minneapolis native. I'll let you get that party started. But yeah, it's kind of funny that we're all just seemingly all in on this player.
Yeah, well, but just before we started recording, we were just talking a little bit about what we're going to talk about, and we both said, like, you know, what kind of archetypes do we like for undrafted free agents or for late second rounders, and we both, like you said rim runner, and then almost, you know, simultaneously we both said Jericho Sims. This is a guy who is just a freak athlete, man, like, maybe the best athlete in the draft, like, especially, I guess, at that size. Like, there's probably better leapers than him, but at that size, he's just an amazing kind of vertical athlete. He's 6'10", he's 245 pounds, played for Texas. I don't know if I just said that, but, you know, just that kind of prototypical rim runner, like, gets up and down the floor fast, gets down the lane fast, can play in pick and roll. He's not very skilled outside of that, but he can defend. He can switch, move his feet on the perimeter a little bit as well, which is really encouraging. But I just think, like, that's the kind of guy, like, that 2015 DeAndre Jordan archetype has died off a little bit, but the players who do it and the players who get minutes doing it are really helpful players still. And I spoke about this with Dane a little bit a few weeks ago. This roster just has so many guys that archetype would benefit. Obviously, D'Lo is the first one that comes to mind. I think Kat can play, you know, there's minutes Kat can play with that guy, you know, when you're running double drags where one guy rolls and Kat pops. Like, Anthony Edwards can use a good screener who puts pressure on the rim and can help him in pick and roll game. Leandro Bolmaro, that's where it came up with Dane. Like, that's a guy who thrives with good role men. And obviously, if they want him to come in and be an impact player straight away, which is still up for debate whether that can happen in his first year, I think that you need to pair him with guys who really supplement his skill set. And I just think that although it's kind of a dying breed, it's really valuable still in the right setting. And like you said, I think it's a guy who plays 10 minutes a night. It's a guy who comes in for energy and might get 4 points and a couple of rebounds and a blocked shot, but put some pressure on the rim as a vertical spacer. And yeah, I'm all the way in on Jericho Sims. I think his stock has been rising slightly, so maybe he isn't an undrafted target anymore, but that kind of guy, which there's other ones too, like, you know, Ariel Hakpoti. I don't know if I'm saying his name right, because every time I watch it, they say it differently on the broadcast. But he's the same kind of guy, like, just, like, makes a huge impact around the rim and a liability outside the paint, but but really just a guy who brings it as a role man. And I don't know if that's what they're looking for. Like Rosas has never seemed to be an admirer of that type of player, but through what he's been saying lately, or in the few times that we get to hear him, I think he's definitely softened on his stance of just small ball is what's going to win this team games. And maybe inside that softening is him kind of coming around a little bit to a guy who's just a straight up big man who plays like a big man, like an old school big man. And I'm excited to see if they could get a guy like that on a two-way deal and maybe, you know, play him a few minutes here and there, give him some time with the Iowa Wolves, just experiment a little bit. And I think that's the best place to start this experiment.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think we saw more experimentation with Rosas with rim-running bigs with the Rio Grande Valley Vipers, the G League team that he kind of captained while he was in Houston. And I think that type of stuff is really important. Like, you know, I don't think it hurts at all to have that type of player. Because yeah, you can still go small, but I mean, you still need opportunities where you can play multiple, or you can play a style of game, you know, a style of basketball that the game calls for. I mean, mm-hmm. just look at the playoffs this year. Like, I mean, I'd like to look specifically at the Clippers and Sun series for this conversation. Like, both teams went back and forth between playing small, playing big, trying to throw different matchups out there at different points in the game, whether it be the end of the first quarter. Like, the rotations were different almost every single game because both coaches were trying to make adjustments and mismatches. And like, I just don't think you can pigeonhole yourself into, you know, into one play style. And I think the only team of late that really has been able to do that and do it successfully is the Warriors, when the Warriors were just elite, you know, for all those years. And the Timberwolves obviously are not the Warriors, and they're not going to be the Warriors. And I think, you know, if you're just betting on someone like Jericho Sims, who is 6'10", he's got a 7'3.5" wingspan, he's got great hands, catches almost everything, you know, his first and second leaps are both faster than almost anybody I've ever seen in my entire life on the offensive glass. You know, the fact that you could potentially get him, like you were saying, for Jarrett Culver, or maybe trade like a future second round pick to get in and get in a guy like him. Like, you just want to bet on those measurables, and you want to bet on that athleticism. And
for that price, like, it's
exactly. Yeah. Like, how can you not? And two, like, throw him in the G League and see what happens. Like, say, like, all right, this is probably the role that we're going to have you in. Like, let's try and find a guard that can play in the G League that can sort of simulate what D'Angelo Russell's able to do in the pick and roll, and play that way too. Like, the other thing is Jericho Sims also played with a left-handed point guard at Texas and Matt Coleman. And so that's another thing that I think is interesting, because I think having to relearn footwork and screening on opposite sides of the ball, you know, more so in the NBA than you do in college, I think is an adjustment for some players, because the footwork is totally different. And so that's a guy that I think I'm really interested from that perspective. But other than that, I think the Timberwolves just need shooting, man. They need shooting and size on the wing. And
I think they need a point guard as well. I think that all depends on Jordan McLaughlin. Like, do you think they give him another deal? Like, are they trying to bring him back? They need a third string point guard, I think, because we saw this year when D'Lo was hurt and Rubio was in the COVID protocols, like, it got thin real quick, and McLaughlin wasn't that great this year. I think he got better towards the end of the year, and I know he had his struggles with COVID as well, so I don't want to kind of, you know, pin it all on him, and we have seen him play really good basketball, but I just think that a McLaughlin type of happy to be a third stringer, like, that's the kind of player I think you need as well.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't. He's a restricted free agent again, so I'd imagine that the Timberwolves will extend a qualifying offer to him just to keep his restricted status. I could see a world in which J-Mac wants to leave and go somewhere else and, like,
yeah,
try and have a fresh start. Which, yeah, I would agree with that. And so I think buying in on a point guard would be something that would be interesting, provided that the point guard can shoot. So, yeah. I mean,
and I think they tried it last year with Ashton Hagans. Like, it didn't work out, but I think that was the plan, was to get another one in there, an undrafted guy.
Yeah, and I mean, the Timberwolves had an open two-way slot for the second half of the season last year and didn't do anything with it, which I thought was outrageous because it doesn't count anything against the cap or luxury tax. So, the fact that they didn't, and the player can practice now an unlimited amount with the NBA team. So, you know, I'd look for the Timberwolves to for sure, you know, for sure bring in some type of guard, at least at the very least on a two-way deal, whether that be McLaughlin or somebody else. But yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And then, like I said, shooting on the wing, I'm really biased. I'm a huge Michigan fan. But Isaiah Livers is a guy who I think is just very NBA ready in terms of the way he plays and his body too. You know, Isaiah Livers is a guy who's like 6'7", 6'8". Probably slots in there, you know, right around 225, 230 pounds. You know, he might be a tad slower, but I could see Isaiah Livers from an offensive perspective kind of having a career similar to what Robert Covington's been able to do. Whereas they, you know, obviously very different players in college, but just from an offensive perspective and the way that Rocco, you know, can set a good screen, can, you know, can dribble the ball a little bit and pull up into a jumper, and can get downhill and attack the rim if you give them the space to, because they're comfortable with the ball in their hands and they're decent finishers around the rim. You know, he's obviously, you know, a senior, so that's a bit of a difference there. But yeah, he's another guy that I think would be great and is probably a guy that's going to be there right towards the end of the draft or even be an undrafted free agent potentially.
I think the seniors are the guys that you want on two-way deals. Obviously, if you're picking higher in the draft, I'm very against picking 22-year-olds in the top 10. I think it's just kind of really minimizes the potential for superstardom when you're picking a guy who's already so far along in his development. But I think at this stage, if you're talking about undrafted free agents and two-way deals or late second rounders, I think they're the guys you want because they're the most ready guys in general. They're ready to play and to kind of be what they are. And Isaiah Livers is a good shout, I think. Like, that's a guy who's, you know, shot, what, 43% from three on five attempts. You know, he's been an elite free throw shooter, especially the last 2 years, which kind of stamps the fact that he can shoot the hell out of the ball. Like, that's the kind of guy that, obviously not to a Cam Johnson level, because he was drafted high for a reason and was always going to be a first rounder, even if we did think that he was drafted way too high by Phoenix at the time. But like, those guys who are tall, strong, or strong enough to compete, you know, against NBA athletes and can shoot the ball, like, it's a very, very good foundation for a role player. And sometimes that's all you need from a role player. Like, if that translates, then you have a guy who can play 15 minutes a game. Like, and Minnesota have got better at shooting. You know, they're not the team that has no three-point shooters like they were a few years ago, but there's still light there. Like, especially if Malik Beasley gets moved in a trade this year, like, outside of Towns and Russell, you don't really have any other guys who stretch the floor at a really high level. Jaden McDaniels probably, but, you know, like I've been really looking at floor spacing lately for an article that I'm working on, and shot gravity. And, you know, you can be a shooter and not be a floor spacer. You need to be a guy who, honestly, I don't think Jaden McDaniel right now is a guy who stretches, spaces the floor, because teams don't respect him enough to not help off him if they have to not, you know, come and tag Towns like on a roll or come and help from the nail on D'Angelo Russell or on Anthony Edwards if they get past their man. Like, if you need to find more guys who space the floor. Malik Beasley does, because they don't help off Malik Beasley at the nail, because he hits threes in a variety of different ways. They don't help off Karl Anthony Towns ever, because he just, you know, splashes threes from any which way. So finding more guys who can shoot the ball like that, the odds are you're probably not going to find a guy like that outside of the draft, but taking a shot on it, putting them in the G League, seeing what they can do, you know, I think that's good business.
Yeah, I mean, and the one thing that's unfortunate with Livers is he had surgery because of a stress fracture in his foot in April. And he'll probably be out about 6 months, so probably would miss obviously summer league and maybe the first part of camp. But again, like I just think he's a guy that you his game is going. I just don't see a way in which his game does not translate. Into being a role player at the very least. My biggest things for the Timberwolves are get a backup five that can rim run or is more of a traditional center, in the sense that, you know, they are legitimately very large, can rebound and can rim run. And then size and shooting on the wing, wherever you can get it, man. You know, I think that takes priority over defense, because if you need to figure your offense out and you need to get guys to, if you get everybody playing cohesively on the defensive end, even if you don't have good defenders, you can have a passable defense. You know what I mean? So I think that like offense needs to be your kind of your chief concern there. But especially just with the role players that the Timberwolves have now, like what guys do they have on the wing that are legitimately big and actually play minutes?
Well, that transfers us into the what we want to speak about next, which is envisioning these roles of the bench players. And we had a Twitter conversation with a few people a few nights ago, and Jalen Noel was the subject of that conversation. And that's my trepidation with Noel, is I just don't think he's big enough to be a guy who warrants immediate, you know, for sure in the rotation kind of status. And I like Jalen Noel, and I think you're kind of more against me than with me here. Then I just think that at 6'4", which is, you know, almost seems generous at times, he's just not a big dude. I just think it's hard on this team when you have Beasley and you have Russell. Okogie plays bigger than he is, but, you know, he's still small. Rubio's there as your backup point guard. Like, they're just... The players who do good things offensively are all very small, and I think Noel is the guy that might get left out there. So starting with him, like, do you think that his role increases, decreases, you know, kind of stays in that inconsistent area that it was this year? Like where do you see him at next year?
I think it completely hinges on whether or not Malik Beasley is on the team next year, because I think Noel is kind of a Beasley facsimile. And the other thing too is like, I think with shooters that are elite in college and have a lot of leash as offensive players, and they're asked to do more than just shoot the ball like Noel was at Washington. I mean, he was the Pac-12 player of the year at Washington. You know, I think that guys like that struggle to translate to the NBA when then their minutes are extremely spotty and they don't really have the opportunity to find a rhythm. And it's like, when you played Jalen Noel consistent minutes every day in Iowa, you shot 44% on like 7 or 8 attempts from 3 per game. I mean, and I'll just take that sample. Some people may care more about, you know, the fact that, the fact that he hasn't shot it quite as well at the NBA level. And like, I understand that, but he shot 44% on 181 threes in the G League, shot 39.6% on 227 threes in college. So I just trust that sample a lot more. And to be honest with you, in terms of his role, I think he needs to get secondary creation minutes off the bench too. Like, I'd love to see what Noel and D'Angelo Russell, like a lineup, a backcourt that was like that played, what would play like together. Just because, you know, I think if you can get Noel more spot up opportunities, that would be really good for him, or opportunities where, okay, he makes one, then the defense kind of closes out to him harder and he's able to attack a little bit and get to that mid range pulley, that he showed that he can get to. And he's got a good floater too.
He's an elite mid range shooter. Why?
Like, all of his shot mechanics are way too good for me to just write him off and for the Timberwolves to not play him. Cause there could be
He's a good shooter, man. Yeah. Like, I'm with you there. He's a good shooter. Like, he's been streaky, but even this season, I don't know what his numbers ended up at, but it felt like they were better than probably what they did, right? Like, I think that last season, his first season, he kind of shot like 3 of 22 or something in the limited minutes he had. This year, he got more run. And even as a streaky shooter, I think he's a guy who can hit tough shots. And, like, not all three-point shots are created equal. You know, like, guys who can hit shots off the dribble, that's a way more impactful shot and also a harder shot to hit. Like, Luka Doncic shoots, what, 32-33% from three? Like, but he's not a bad shooter. Like, sometimes the numbers need to be put into context, and I think Noel was thrust at times. He had a weird role, because at times he was not on the court at all. At other times, he was just a purely spot-up shooter. And then probably way too much, he was tasked as, like, an offensive engine for the second unit. And I just think that if you can unburden him, or, you know, if you can take some of that creation burden off him, that's when you start to see the best version of him. You still need to give him enough to let him work in the mid-range, to let him get to that floater, to let him shoot threes, like, out of pick and roll. But you don't want to overload him to the point where he's the guy carrying your offense. And I'm rewatching, you know, the second half of the Timberwolves season right now, and those first few games out of the All-Star break, the New Orleans win, big win, and then a couple of games against Portland, where Ant kind of cemented himself as what we think he is now. Noel was the sole operator in that second unit. And he didn't look that good, but when they put Anthony Edwards next to him in those kind of mixed units, that's when he started to look really good, because Edwards would take half the possessions as the ball handler, and Noel would take the other half. I just think, to me, that's the ideal role for him, and I agree that's contingent on Beasley not being here, because Beasley's going to get those shooting guard minutes, especially if they do want to bring him off the bench. But I just think that he's a very specific player, I think, to maximize him. And I think if you don't maximize him, he begins to get a little bit more harmful than he should be, if that makes sense.
I'm with you completely. And like you said, not all numbers are equal. And I just want to offer this up. So Jalen Noel this season, you know, with the Timberwolves, obviously, and just really, like, in his career, like, hasn't necessarily been the best three-point shooter at the NBA level. So he shot, you know, he shot 30% on 176 threes in his career. This season, he shot 33% on 153s. But Jalen Noel was not healthy for the last six games. He was not anywhere close to 100% his last six games. He was dealing with a bruised tibia, and when your lower body is a shooter who has a lot of lift on your shot, when your tibia is injured, you're kind of screwed. And so, from my opinion, after I also rewatched almost all of the second half of the games, and in my opinion, I don't think he was close to 100% the last six games. He shot 3 of 18 from three in those games. So if you remove that from his season sample, which I personally do not think is too much bending of the sample at all, and then factor in, you know, the first four games of the Finch era, under Chris Finch, he was 29 of 76. 76 threes, yeah, I get it, not the biggest sample size, whatever. But 76 is a lot different than, like, 30 or 40, which is what we're working off of with some Bulmero stuff from overseas. That's 38%, and that's much closer to what I think he's actually capable of doing. And he's a player that I think is worth giving rope to, just because that type of offense that he can bring when he's on is needle moving, I think, for the Timberwolves in certain games. And being a needle mover for 5, 6, 7 minutes of a game, that could be the difference between winning and losing a game. And, you know, I think we saw some of it in the preseason last year, of just, like, he can get in his zone, and that's important. And especially if you trade Malik Beasley, and even if you don't, like, guys are going to get hurt. Guys are not going to be healthy. You're going to need offense where you can get it. And keeping a guy like Noel in the rotation, even if it's like 8, 9, 10 minutes a night to just go out there and chuck, I'm all for it, because, you know, I don't know. I'm such a believer in rhythm shooters. And I think Noel, especially, like, if you're going to end up in situations where like Juancho's going to be hurt. Juancho's not going to play probably until March. And if, yeah. and if that's the case, like your shooting options are just limited off the bench, and you might have to go small when you're playing with the bench, or you might just have to do more, you know, mixing of the starters and the bench to create lineups where you're not getting killed defensively. And again, like it's on the coaches to figure out the best possible ways to get these players to fix to fit together. But I think that I think people are going to be pleasantly surprised with what they see from Jalen Noel at Summer League this year for sure.
I don't want to keep you and the listeners too long. So let's get into, we'll leave the summer, we'll come back next week, we'll do the full Summer League talk, because that probably requires, you know, a whole episode to itself. But thinking of these roles for these end of bench guys, or these bench guys in general, I think, you know, Rubio we can probably skip over, because we know that if he's on the team, he's going to be the backup point guard, like, and he'll probably play a little bit with D'Angelo Russell. I think that's kind of just what Rubio is right now. Whether he's on the team is a different discussion, but we'll, like, you know, we'll park that. Jarrett Culver, I know you are not a Culver fan, and I am not either, so we'll leave him. I think we both think that he's not going to be in the rotation to start the year.
I actually think he is going to be in the rotation to start the year. I think that's that might be a crazy statement right now, but I would not be surprised at all if Culver plays well in a closed door environment and they're like, you know what? Fuck it. We're back on the train. And he plays and, well and again in the preseason. While he's on the
team, Rosas is going to push to play him if he seems like he deserves it.
I don't know. And it's not saying that I want him to or that I think he should. I'm just thinking that, like, there might be a point where the Timberwolves are like, all right, man, we need defense out there.
Yeah.
And who knows what the roster is going to look like. Like, they may make trades. I'm not sure. Obviously, like we discussed earlier, but I don't know, man. Yeah. I mean, I would love to just see him, like, go to the G League and just, like, destroy people in the G League and then come up and, like,
I don't even know if he has that in him, but
which is sad. Which is,
yeah.
And by destroying, I mean just, like, playing well for his standards, but
What about Vando? What about Jared Vanderbilt? He, in these second, you know, in these rewatches of games, he's a guy who stood out to me as maybe, even with his flaws, a little bit more valuable than I thought. Him and Jake Layman are both guys that I think can operate, you know, can be handy players in the right situations, like Noel. Like, how high are you on Vanderbilt, and how high are you on Layman?
All right, so if we want to go, like, a scale of 1 to 10, where 10's like, I'm super high, and 1's like, not that high.
Yeah, relative to what their role would likely be in your mind.
I think with Vando, I'm like a 6.5 or a 7. And the reason being is I think that we saw some good defensive creativity from Finch in the second half of the season. You know, and potentially Vanderbilt, or Vanderpool as well. I don't want to discredit him if he was involved, but yeah, with the way that they used Vanderbilt and Okogie, kind of the two of three Vanderbilt, Okogie, McDaniels in defending pick and rolls. I thought that the way that they, you know, showed kind of some preliminary foundational switch everything tactics when those guys were on the floor were really promising. And Vanderbilt is a much better perimeter defender than I ever thought he was going to be. I didn't think that he was going to be a better perimeter defender than he was interior defender, but you know, that's where
he
we are.
He's an advanced stats darling. Like, Jared Van, by every advanced stats, the ones I trust, the ones I don't trust, like, defensively, it's all, there's always noise with defensive advanced stats, but, like, Jared Vanderbilt rates highly, very highly, in pretty much all of them. Like, at some, in some cases, like, top 10 defender in the league, highly. Like,
yeah,
he's doing something right.
Yeah, it's a small sample, but he's also really versatile as a defender. Like, there are two, like, Basketball Index versatility rankings. Like, he is really high in that, which is really valuable. I mean, the potential that you could have, you know, three guys that could defend 1 through 4 in him, McDaniels, and Okogie. is awesome. Like, and I think he's going to be back in Minnesota. I don't really think there's a doubt about that, just considering that he was in Louisville with D'Lo and Kat this week, and Finch at D'Lo's camp. He's been at a couple of different Lynx games this summer. He's been in Minnesota. I'd be shocked if he wasn't back in the Timberwolves long term. But yeah, man, I'm big on him. Just kind of relative to what he did this year, just because I think that he becomes more valuable if the Timberwolves move away from a drop and start switching a lot more, which I think is going to happen. And two, I think the way that the Timberwolves are going to do a lot of handoff sets for Ant, but also for D'Lo too, is like a rhythm shooter and a guy who can then get into the mid range. I think that that's going to be important. And he's really good at faking handoffs and kind of diving to the rim and driving. So that's one that I think is going to be kind of sneaky, impactful on the offensive end.
Layman, rotation or no rotation?
How much are the Timberwolves down by? If they're down 20 like plus, Rose asked the rotation, baby. He's like an ultimate spark plug.
Jake Layman's always going to be one of those guys that just I know is not really good enough to be on a good team's rotation, but I'll always enjoy when he's on the court.
Yeah, like I do think that there's value in Jake Layman, though, because I think that Jake Layman like could be sneaky good at like teaching Jaden McDaniels, Josh Okogie, and Anthony Edwards about cutting. Because, like, and I'm
just a very smart player. Like, I'm a sucker for a guy who's just very smart, even if his talent level kind of doesn't, you know, stack up in the same way. But just even defensively, like, he just does the right things defensively a lot. He's never going to stand out, but he just, I feel like the defense is always a little bit better when he's on the floor because he just makes the right rotations. Like, he's good at low man help. Like, he's just the guy, I think, that does the right things, but he's just, you know, he doesn't really do much offensively. His 3-point shot's not falling. He's just not, you know, not really an impactful player. But I don't know. I like Jake Layman. I agree that he probably shouldn't be in the rotation, but he's a guy that I'll always enjoy seeing when he is in it.
Yeah, you know, I definitely think that he's a guy that's worth keeping on your team, but potentially even after this contract. I don't know what the team thinks of him. I don't know what he thinks of the team. But he seems like a guy where if you have an injury one night here or there, or like a guy gets in foul trouble, where like he could come in and like feasibly be a boost to your team, or at the very least just like not be someone who is actively harming your team's chances of winning when he's out there, you know. But it's just a guy that's like you don't want to consistently have out there in every single game, you know. So I think being situationally like smart and aware about the way that they deploy him will be important, but generally speaking, just for like a guy who's like more towards an end of the bench guy, I think as far as end of the bench guys go, I'm pretty high on him, like you were saying, just because of how smart he is and just like overall his high competency level, I think is important.
There's no one else really, I think, that is very kind of important to talk about. I think Noel was the one that to me is kind of teetering on the edge. Josh Okogie, let's finish on Josh. I know he's out doing the Olympic warm-ups right now, playing point guard, just doing JO things. We're big JO fans, just like we are, you know, in that same layman kind of way, which we know sometimes he can't be on the court, but we love him anyway. What do you think? I don't think they're going to look to trade Josh. Like, I think that he's kind of a player that seems to be well liked by pretty much all of the coaches that he's ever had, but what do they do with him? Like where does he come in? Where does he factor into this equation?
Man,
it's a hard. He might be the hardest one of the whole lot.
I mean, it stinks that we don't get to see him in summer league. Like I know he's probably like too old and too experienced to be in summer league. But I think that his like leadership is just so valuable, and I think that players gravitate towards him, and his energy is so infectious in a good way. He's chaotic good, you know? Like I just think that some fans are turned off by that, and that's fine, but I think in terms of his role, I mean, he's the best individual one-on-one defender the Timberwolves have, in my opinion. I don't think Jaden McDaniels is there yet. I think Jaden McDaniels has shown flashes and strides, and it wouldn't surprise me if by the end of the season, Jaden McDaniels is the best individual one-on-one team defender that the Timberwolves have. But, you know, man, the Timberwolves are bottom six or seven in the league in percentage of unassisted 2-point midfield goals at the rim, meaning basically like guys are just getting beat off the dribble and taken to the rim, you know, in top six highest rates in the NBA, yeah. which is terrible. And if you're having a bunch of guys that are just getting beat one-on-one off the dribble, like that's a problem. And you need guys that can be stoppers. And especially again, if you're going to kind of transition into a more switch heavy defensive system, which it sounds like the Timberwolves are, or going to be able to play zone, having a guy with the length and strength of Josh Okogie, is really important, man. And I like him starting if the Timberwolves don't acquire a better power forward, just because I think bringing Beasley off the bench makes more sense. So you have a more balanced second unit. But yeah, I think Okogie is going to be a situational player this year in the sense that he'll get way more burn. He'll get way more burn against teams like Dallas where he's got to guard Luka, or Brooklyn where he's got to guard Harden and stuff like that. But I think if he can kind of stick in those corners offensively, and shoot those corner threes or cut from the baseline, I think that's probably the right offensive role for him.
Yeah, I think you Bruce Brown him. You know, like I know he doesn't have the touch on those floaters like Bruce Brown, but like I love the idea of just running Josh Okogie as a role threat, as a dribble handoff initiator. Like I think that they started to play around with that a little bit towards the end of the season. Finch, especially as a screen setter and as a role guy who can pass on the short roll, because he can do that, Josh. Like he's got really good vision when he's not out of control, and he's less likely to be out of control if he just takes one dribble off a short roll and then hits a corner shooter. Like I that's the best way to minimize, you know, he's foibles, which is kind of not being able to shoot. You get him inside the like inside the arc, and then defenses only have to kind of take a step or two towards him, and all of a sudden he can create space for himself rather than being out on the 3-point line and allowing defenders to kind of zone off him and make life easy for the defense, especially when Karl Anthony Towns is going to be in post up situations a lot. So
I'm
with you there.
And I think he got a lot better at cutting last season, and just overall having more spacing and shooting on the floor. I think really helped him. And I think he and Jaden specifically got a lot better at cutting from the weak side to collapse the backside of the defense for shooters in the corners, or two to just like force defenders to kind of think about where they are on the floor and kind of get lost for a second, which creates, you know, whether it be an easier entry pass for Cat or a swing shot, whatever it is. Those are small things that can really kind of open up an offense and help other guys get going. So, you know, as he just adds more to kind of that, you know, off ball ancillary kind of toolkit, I think he'll be a much more playable guy, but definitely a guy that I think will be heavy in the rotation this year, regardless of the moves that they make, and a guy who I don't think that they're going to include in any type of trade.
Yeah, I agree. Let's leave it at that. I've taken up enough of your time. You got anything to plug quickly before we get out of here?
Yeah. So I'm going to be starting some player review stuff. That'll hopefully run from now up until the start of the season. Now that, you know, we've kind of got some Timberwolves stuff coming. So I'm starting with Jalen Noel. I'm hoping for that to be out Monday. If you're listening to this on Saturday in the United States, I'm hoping that'll be out Monday. If not, maybe Tuesday, early next week. But that series will kind of just be looking at, you know, just general thoughts on a player, maybe some interesting stats, if their role changed from Saunders to Finch, Something I think they got to work on if they want to be better, and something that they showed flashes of that I believe in for next season. So that'll involve some stats and film stuff for each player. So that's starting with Jalen Noel, hopefully Monday, and that'll be out on Canis Hoopers, of course.
Guaranteed to be great, as all Jack Bowman work is. Thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it. We did mean to talk about the Summer League. If you heard me say that at the start and you waited for me to get to it, I apologize, because we've just gone too long to start another huge subject. But we will get back into the virtual booth soon enough and talk some Summer League, as that's coming up in just under 3 weeks, I think. So we will do a full Summer League episode.
And hopefully we'll have some more clarity too about Anthony Edwards' status for Summer League, which I think will significantly impact that conversation. So it could be kind of a blessing in disguise there.
We'll get into that next week. Thanks again for coming on, and I appreciate you, man.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me.